Got 25 to 75 people in your company? Check out knowyourcompany.com, software that helps companies like Airbnb know their company better.
It is the Chicago First podcast on the Dynasty Podcast Network, featuring interviews with Chicago's premier artists and industry and creatives and culture leaders. Hosted by Haima Black. Welcome to Chicago.
Haima Black, live from Virgin Hotels for Dynasty Podcast. We're here for another week. Shout out Virgin Hotels for hosting us. We have a killer night of guests tonight. We're going to be talking with Chuck Anderson, a.k.a. No Pattern, known for a lot of great work, including his work with Havas. We're going to be talking with Ellie Van Gogh, really exciting rising talent in Chicago. And first, we have a guest who long overdue I've wanted to have on for a long time, Malcolm London, man. Thank you for coming up.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, man.
Absolutely. That's exciting. You are somebody who's had a really busy year and a half. I mean, like, has it felt like a whirlwind for you for a while?
Yeah, always. When I wake up in the morning, often. But actually, it's felt more, I've been able to focus more on the music and the art, and it's felt more stable, I guess. When you're organizing and you're an activist, everything is, a lot of it is reactionary to the powers that be.
Right.
And so it's just, it's been beautiful to just have reflective time to like, say what I feel and how I want to feel it, and creatively also impact the world.
That's got to be a luxury.
Yeah, it feels that way, and it's hard sometimes as an organizer to like be in this like selfish world of like a healthy level of narcissism. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I think it's doing the similar work, the cultural work of expressing the human experience.
Well, yeah, I think the spirit of what you're doing carries through all the different lanes you're involved in. And we're going to talk about all those, the activist work, the poetry, the education, the music, the whole spread. So, but we always kind of start at the beginning. For you, like, how did a lot of this begin for you, whether it's music, whether it's activist work, whether it's poetry? Like, how did you start to develop your own kind of creative identity?
Yeah, man, I owe a lot of my work and growth to Louder Than a Bomb,
yes.
To U Media, to all the alternative educational spaces in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
That, you know, in a lot of ways saved my life, but, you know, just allowed me to be myself. Shout out to funding programs outside of schools.
You know what's interesting is I've been hearing from more and more people that Louder Than a Bomb specifically has been like kind of a launching point for people or a foundation, and it's like I just think it can't be overstated the value of what they're doing.
Absolutely. Shout out to LTAB 2017.
Yeah. So, okay, so you kind of found your voice, your footing in Louder Than a Bomb, Young Chicago Authors, all that kind of stuff. How did you start to, I guess, identify or approach being an activist? Did that just happen overnight one day, or was that something that you slowly came into?
Yeah, I've been thinking about that a lot lately because, I mean, I've gotten that question, and it's always like, where and when did you become, like...
Right, you know, like, this, when this, did you pick up your card
yeah,
and become a...
You know,
right.
You know, but I honestly got to give a shout-out to my pops, man, because, like, the, like... knee-jerk reaction to like wanting to do something right in the world. Like my pops was always giving me the 411 as a kid. Like I grew up listening to Martin Luther King speeches in the car ride to the crib. You know, like
so. How could you not?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of just in that. Or Malcolm X's like photos on the. I mean, they named me after Malcolm X.
Right.
So, you know, in that way, I've always been in that space. But then it's, I think for me, the wake up call that I had really was. As a poet, like, you write a lot about imagining the world to look different.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, a lot of poets were just talking about stuff.
Right.
And I was like, how do I give my poems feet? And so for me, that was, I don't know if folks remember, but back in 2009, Darion Albert, who was a teen that was killed in Finger High School, really, really woke me up to, like, you know, this, I have to literally do something.
Right.
And not just write about it, but be about it.
Well, and we have, unfortunately, we've really entered an era where, like, there's more and more really kind of heartbreaking acts that are happening.
Yeah.
And so you're right, but it became harder to sit on the sidelines when, you know, all these kind of things are happening.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about your role in Chicago. Like, talk about what you're doing in the activist space in Chicago right now, how that works, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out. I'm a firm believer in organizations. I'm a firm believer in organizing money and people. Mm-hmm. So I still support organizations like BYP 100, mm-hmm. Asada's Daughters, Let Us Breathe Collective, all these organizations that are doing the day-to-day work and really not the sexy work, you know what I mean? The work of, like, punching into a clock you do not get currency from. And so I just want to give all love and all that to them. But personally, it's just trying to figure out where and how I can leverage, you know, my social capital for the greater good. And I get to do, I'm surrounded by people who are in that same light, who come from that same space. So yeah, man, like, you know, I went to Stand and Rock with Vic last year. You know, unfortunately, they're still gonna fucking build the pipeline. And just really leveraging any resources I can, yeah, and helping the folks.
I think it's interesting you bring up the social capital, because I think for some people they might say, like, oh, well, I don't have enough of a voice, or I wish I could do that, but I don't have the power to do that. Like, talk about the role of social media in activism, in addition to, of course, also taking it out into the real world.
Yeah, I mean, shout out to social media, man. When I realized social media was extremely important was back when Ferguson happened. And you saw all these photos of, mm-hmm. like, I think there's, like, the infamous photo where a dude is, like, picking up a canister,
right,
and throwing it back. And simultaneously, you saw folks in Palestine, like, showing solidarity with this movement, right? And so anything that can make communication instantaneous across the globe is, like, beautiful and is now putting us in a different space. You know, I think social media is the best. For me, Twitter is my news in 2017.
Yeah, for real. When people, I talk to some people and they're like, I'm not a Twitter person. And I'm like, how do you do anything? Where do you find things out?
A person, Yeah, man. I mean, because literally every time I've seen the news, like Twitter even right now, this the biggest liar in the country runs the country.
Sure.
Like every second he's like, I didn't say this, and then somebody
and then
Twitter's
someone's
like
got
pulling
the receipt.
Yeah. It's like
right.
fact checking 101. So I think social media is extremely important, but I'm weary of, like, there's only so much that can be done in the virtual world.
Sure.
And the real intersections of poverty do not exist online, you know. Mm-hmm. When I think about, you know, most people in the communities that I serve, they don't get on Twitter. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. They might get on Facebook, but, like, people aren't dying on Twitter, right? You can see it on Twitter, but, you know what I'm saying? So just making sure that, you know, at the end of the day, you still got to hit the ground, hit the streets, do talk to the people. Retweets can't do that. But shout out to social media.
So let's talk about the perception of Chicago. I mean, something that all of us here in the city see, yeah, is when Trump talks about how it's a war zone here, and it's Iraq, and it's all these things, and it's like, as somebody who's on the ground actively working to make things better, like, what's your response when you hear something like that?
Fuck you.
Right.
Basically, I mean, I don't, at this point, I'm so tired of talking about Donald Trump, man.
No, yeah.
Like, but, you know, yeah, it's sad, really. It's really tragically sad that the first and only response, really, to a lot of heartbreak and sorrow and sadness is, how do we add more sorrow and sadness?
How do we make things worse?
Yeah. And it's like really just not even recognizing folks' humanity who live. You know, like, when you say the South and West Side and is a violent place, when you talk about gangs there, you're talking about, like, people.
Right.
Like, you're writing off entire neighborhoods. And, you know, even in the neighborhoods themselves, we are, like, you know, internalize, you know, a lot of things, but, like, even like, no parent raises a young person to murder somebody,
right?
No family, no grandmothers, no cousins, nobody, like, wants that for any child.
That's not the goal.
Like, not you know, and definitely not to be killed, but also not to be a murderer. And we gotta, like, change and shift our ideologies around even the conversation around violence. You know, it's more violent to close a school than it is for somebody to punch somebody in the face, to me.
100%.
And so even that, but just we got to have love, man. And I say that shit all the time, but it's not some cliche shit. It's just like, if you don't love these people enough that the only thing you say to stop gun violence is more guns, then you're either dumb as fuck, which a lot of politicians are, or you just don't love these people. And I think the people are starting to realize that, hopefully, every other day.
What are some resources that Chicagoans have or could take advantage of that could... I mean, I'm not going to sit here and be like, how do we stop the violence? Yeah, that's not a simple question that we're going to solve in this podcast. But like, but what are some resources that communities or people on the ground could take advantage of that could maybe turn things around, even just to a degree?
Yeah, I mean, well, look, man, I got all the answers, bro. If you want to stop violence, this is the first step. Sarcasm. No... Really, man, Chicago, what Miriam Kaba, who's a mentor of mine, she always says, we do not need, no one in the world hasn't figured out how to solve racism. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, people are thinking about these things since the day oppression has happened, right? Like, it's not just like, oh, we need more fun, more books, right? Like, there's like, we don't need new ideas. We need more people to execute them. We need more people to be organized. And so, like, in the age of mass information, just know that it's so much information out there. I'll shout out BYP 100. I'll shout out We Charge Genocide. These are organizations. The information is out there. The organizations are out there. And if they're not out there, then create them yourself. Like, but you can't not do anything. If we do anything, nothing will change.
Oh, I like that. I like that resource. Or I like what you just said, that, like, if you don't find a resource, create one.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a lot of power in that.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
What do you see as some of your goals in the activist space this year, like, or what's kind of like ahead for you?
I think so. In organizing, I think right now the big question is we're finding out that a lot of struggles come directly from police unions, and so we're coming at the police unions. But my where I'm headed right now, I guess in the activist space is more in a quantitative way. And so, you know, if you said you're creating a resource, I created Opia. And so I'm hoping, you know, even as an organizer, I got here because of James Baldwin. I got here because of Tupac. You know what I mean? And so, you know, I'm trying to make essentially a musical history book, you know, for folks or for young people who share my similar perspective. So anyway, I'm working in and going on tour soon, and at the end of April, 420 kicks off in Chicago.
And that's your first tour, right?
First headlining tour, our first project, and we're doing it big in the Midwest because that's where I'm from. Shout out to Chicago.
But that's exciting.
Yeah, no, man, it's fun, man. It's also a lot more. Rapping is not easy. You know, it's not just putting some shit on SoundCloud and blowing up. It's like it's a lot of thought work. But yeah, man, I'm super excited. The tour kicks off, you know, Tuesday. There's press release jumping off for the tour, and there's an Opia promo video. Yeah, man, so just be on the lookout for all of that. I'm super excited.
Yeah, and Opia is the debut full length that just dropped in October, right?
Yeah, October 17th, 10/17. Shout out to Gucci. yeah, man, it's been out for a minute. Numbers have been, like, jumping, which is weird. It's like for the first 3 months, like, numbers were steady, and then I guess like mugs got on to the music, and like, you know, at least on SoundCloud, it's like it cracked over you know, a couple 100,000 views, and Spotify is at like 300K or something.
Well, and I think people are just becoming more and more aware of you in general, whether it's in whatever lane, music, activism, any of it. It's like, I think your name is just getting in front of people more too, you know, and especially. I think when you put that project out, and it doesn't hurt that there's names that people know there, like Jamila and Vic, and it's like, and everyone's looking at Chicago.
Right, right.
Everyone's looking at Chicago right now.
It's the place to be.
It's weird because you have all of these really heartbreaking elements here, and then you have this really kind of victorious narrative as well, where it's like the chance kind of like the spotlight that's here. Like, what has that been like on the music side? Like, what is it like being a musician in Chicago right now?
Man, I'm so proud of you know, Chance is both my friend and like my arch nemesis in my head. You know what I mean? Like I'm trying to, you know, like I'm every day inspired and challenged by him. Vice versa, I think. But yeah, man, it's a beautiful. It's really like such a beautiful creative moment. Because you just see everybody working so hard that really care about their craft. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because we really care about this city. Yeah. And it translates through the music. And so I think and I think the sad part is that when people see Chicago and they see the statistics, they're like, wow, a Chance the Rapper can come from here. Wow, a Malcolm right. London. Wow, a No Name. And it's like, well, yeah, you know, because there is still a lot of beauty in the city, and there's young people who, you know, every day went to a library to write poems, you know.
If the city was just violence, we'd all be dead.
Right, you know
what
I mean?
There wouldn't be any
people.
Yeah, yeah,
and I think that's why people are, not any of the art that we're making isn't as incredible as it is, but, like, I think part of the reason people are looking at Chicago is because they're in disbelief. Like, how can it be so rough? And like all this great art is coming out, it's because it's still a beautiful city, and the part the violence and the trauma helps, or the art helps, you know, navigate the trauma. I mean,
well, everyone's more passionate, and what I've seen is that just everybody is raising their game now.
Yeah,
like I'm not a musician at all. I'm raising my game because everybody else is just doing such good work, and I think everybody, even outside of the artist side, it's like everybody's trying to do better and take their crafts as seriously as possible because everybody else is doing the same thing.
Yeah.
You don't want to be the one who's slacking.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the record's out now. It's called Opia. And so listening to the record, there were a couple things that stood out to me. First, something I thought that was really great is, you know, I think when people think of the name Malcolm London, they think of obviously this really serious activist, the activist work you're doing. It's very serious professional narrative. Yeah. It's very passionate. And then you have, like, a song like House Party.
Right, yeah.
And then that's, like, a totally different side of you where it's just, like, it's a lot of fun, which I don't know if people necessarily see that with you.
Yeah,
right?
Man, that was really intentional, man. Because, like, just even in my journey, like, folks, you know, I am both a wild cannon in the streets and also at a party. and so, like, some people are often like, oh, man, you, like, turn up, you know? Like, it's like...
Like, you like enjoying yourself,
right,
too?
Yeah. You're a person. And really, like, even in my, like, I was very intentional about Opia just being a project about Malcolm London, the person, and not Malcolm mm-hmm. London, the organizer, because I think people get confused. It's like, I both turn up and like, go to parties and read books and watch anime and, like...
You can be all those things.
Right, you know, you could be an activist and somebody who... Like Rose Blunt's 21st. I don't know. Like you
right.
could do that, you know. But really, really, you know, to me, the best artist, and that's why, like, I'm a fan of all the folks in Chicago. Vic Mensa, you know, mm-hmm. who's his last tape. I'm like, I mean, that's my boy. But also, I'm a huge fan of, because it's really like, I think the best artists are able to translate the human experience, and you know, the human experience includes turning up, or like, you know, I mean I'm still to this day a fan of Chief Keef, right? Or like,
right,
like they're like, you need all elements, right? I listen to Frank Ocean and Chief Keef, right? Like, because I contain multitudes, and everybody does. But that was the point where Opia, even sonically, you know, shout out to EB for producing that, most of that tape. But even sonically, I wanted it to, you know, every song is it sounds like a full project, mm-hmm. but sonically all the beats I think are different, and that was intentional because I wanted to show people my versatility as an artist, and that I don't only write poems about Black Death, although I do write a lot of poems about that because that shit need to change.
Well, yeah,
but
yeah.
Black, but all everything, you know, everything is everything. Shout out to 15.
Yeah, and I was about to ask about the title track. Talk about the title track, what the name Opia means, and also putting Jamila Woods on that song. Like, why was it important to have Jamila? Because I think she brings a lot of soul and heart to that as well.
Yeah, I love Jamila so much. That's like my big sister. She's helped me a lot in my personal growth, and so. I'm a forever keep shout. I keep saying shout out because shout out to everybody. You don't. I am not who I am without other people in the communities that I love. But actually the Opia, that, so Opia means the ambiguous intensity of looking someone in the eye, mm-hmm. which can feel both invasive and vulnerable, And when I stumbled upon this word, I was like, man, this is like, I want people to feel like they're looking me in my eyes when they hear my project. Mm-hmm. Even if it's awkward and corny and weird and super handsome, I want them to feel that, you know?
Right.
And so, that song actually went through like three different transitions. The first song, it was almost one of the earlier songs I made, and Jamila was on it, but then we worked, shopped it, and it is what it is now. But yeah, man, that's my favorite song in the project.
It's a very personal, it's a very impactful listen.
Yeah. I'm glad you think so. That's good.
The final song on the record, it's just your name. It's titled Malcolm London. And what I think about interesting is, or what is interesting about that, much like this interview, even though the song is titled after you, it's you shouting out all of your friends and family, all these people that are really important to you. Talk about the message behind that song and giving recognition to everybody that you are there.
Yeah, man, I like you a lot. We're friends now because, yeah, that's...
You know what? It's so sad because I have so many artists who are like, thanks for doing prep. And I'm like, that's the bare minimum you're supposed to do for this. Yeah, you know, and I'm always like horrified that there's all these journalists that are probably sitting down with you being like, so Malcolm London.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So, talk about this final song, Malcolm.
Yeah, man. It's... Yeah, it was the outro, and inadvertently, but also on purpose, like the fact that you point out that, you know, this is my self-titled track, but I'm really just giving love to all the people who helped me make the project and you know, essentially make me. But yeah, man, that's actually one of my favorite songs on the tape. Outside of like personally and making it, like I remember being up at 3 a.m. very lit. And not able to go to bed. And so I was like, I like wrote that verse, and it like sometimes when you make something, you feel very like, you know, when some shit is not only good, like you give yourself like the,
you feel like it's special. Yeah.
But it felt so special. You know, I felt like this homage to all my folk, like, you know, my best friend. I shout out my best friend Josh, my mom, my grandma, my cousins, like my nieces. And it just felt so good to like get all of that out into a song. And so, so that's my first song. If you haven't heard the tape, listen to that song.
I love that spirit. It almost sounds like it, not even that it sounds like, but it has the feeling of like something that would have been like College Dropout.
Word.
Like when Kanye was still
a
humble Chicago person. You know what I mean? Versus,
I love Kanye. I love you, man.
But it's different now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
So I love it. The record is called Opia. What else is on deck for you this year, whether on the activist side, the music side, education, poems, like all that?
I mean, really, like what the journey is to make all of that not feel so different.
Right.
You know,
it's all you.
Yeah. You know, I am both an artist and an educator who is making art, and an activist who is trying to shift culture with all the love in my heart and all like all the books that I like half-ass read. You know, I'm trying to like, you know, all of that is just me. And so I think I operate sometimes as separate things. But when I walk into a space, I don't walk into a space as a poet. I walk into it as Malcolm London, who is all these things. And so really just trying to let that translate through the art that I make and anything that I do, that, you know, if I come through a party, it's Malcolm London in a party. And if, you know, if I'm chatting with you and we get in an argument about some political shit, that's what might happen, which
it's
I
like
do very often.
It's
yeah, exactly.
Things.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Or if I don't want to talk to you because we disagree, I'm going to just walk away and go get some Hennessy. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, that's just what it's going to be. But I'm excited. The tour's coming up. 420. We got 12 dates, mostly in the Midwest. After that, you know, I've been talking about a book, but Bonnaroo. I'm hitting Bonnaroo this
nice.
Summer. Yeah. Super excited about that.
That's huge.
Yeah. No, I'm excited.
That's
Chances
gonna be fun.
Playing. No Name's down there. Joey.
Is this announced yet?
It announces on Tuesday.
So it is not announced. So this is live.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Oh, maybe I don't know if this is
my contract. So we just broke a bunch of Bonnaroo news on Dynasty Podcast.
Cool.
I love
that.
That's
cool.
A very Chicago lineup.
No, it's going to be fun, man. And this is my first time at Bonnaroo. So I'm like super excited. Super duper excited. But it's really just trying to figure out what tomorrow looks like every day. You know?
Yeah. I love it, man. Malcolm London, like, Like I said, this was overdue.
Yeah, man.
You're somebody I've
me.
Wanted to have on the podcast for a long time. I always have like a mental checklist, you know, like
folks.
Like I live on Twitter. I live in Chicago. I see all these things, and I'm like, we haven't had that guy on. We haven't had her on. Like we haven't had that team on.
Right.
And you were high on that list, man. So I'm really glad we got to do this.
Yeah, yeah, no, man. Thanks for having me, man. And shout out to Voss. I know you got Chuck coming up here. Shout out to LA.
Yeah, we got a really great.
I'm a fan of both though of the brand and definitely a fan of LA too. That's my that's my homie. So. Yeah, man, keep doing what you're doing.
Absolutely,
shout out to
man.
Dynasty, older than NPR, you know what I'm saying?
And you know what? Here's the other thing. We, on this podcast, we check in with our, like, since we're very Chicago-centric, we try to have, like, a network or almost a family of guests. We check in with them probably, like, once a year or, like, as new things are happening, this mic is on for you. So feel free to come back
cool,
as you
man.
Have new things coming on.
Yeah,
and we'll talk it up.
Cool, man. Thank you.
Awesome. Malcolm London. Yeah, thank you, man.
You've been listening to a production of Dynasty Podcast. Find more Dynasty Podcasts at dynastypodcast.com. For the Dynamic Dynasty, Dynasty Descend.